Welcome to Making Sheffield, celebrating the Steel City's history and heritage. Our guest today is author Neil Anderson.
I was privileged to get to know a chap called Doug Lightning, who was the, he sadly passed away a couple of years ago now, but I think he was the last surviving firefighter that fought the fires on the two nights of the Sheffield Blitz. And it really stuck with me that he said, you know, we didn't manage to put out one fire. It was just absolute, you know, devastation. All we could do was try and contain them, try and, you know, kind of protect Sheffield. And he says there was, you know, there was fire engines, fire crews coming to Sheffield from right around the region, from as far away as Leeds and Chesterfield, Derby. They were always kind of all poured into Sheffield, you know, to try and help the city. And he just remembers that, you know, you didn't have time to get scared. You were just absolutely running on adrenaline for that first night. You think, he said he started around 9 o'clock in the evening. I know the all clear sirens didn't go until 17 minutes past four the following morning. He remembers he was just soaking wet and his fingers were just lacerated from the amount of glass, the amount of broken windows just right across the city. And he told me about, they put up a temporary mortuary on Devonshire Green, and he remembers he lost his the biggest single loss of life was in a place called the Marples Hotel in Fitzalan Square, and I think he said he lost his auntie in there. And he said the heat was so intense, the only way you could actually recognise anybody was, you know, was dearly kind of jewellery and dental records. And places like the Marples, there's still, even now, bodies buried under, you know, that site, because they just kind of gave up trying to get them out. They threw lime on them, and, you know, that is still a kind of war grave down there. And there are still so many stories that haven't come out. I know one lady told me that her brother was looked after radar maintenance, and he said, we had the Blitz on the 12th and the 15th of December 1940, and there was 300 planes came over on the biggest raid on the 12th. And he said between the 12th and the 15th there was actually another raid. There was actually 900 planes on their way to Sheffield, and they actually ended up turning back because of bad weather. Maybe whether we'll ever actually be able to corroborate that story, but, you know, if that would have happened, it'd been absolute Armageddon. You can't even imagine, you know, what could have happened. So I think in many respects there's still a lot of stories to come out. I know I've had a lot of really interesting stuff to come through for my updated book, which will be out later in the year. So I found it an absolute, you know, fascinating subject, but, you know, privileged that, you know, that I've been able to, you know, help record memories and bring it back to life. It began, my grandma died 9 months, a year before the 70th anniversary, and she left a memoir that we didn't know about her life, and a lot of that majored on life in the city of Sheffield around the Second World War. And I kind of expected it to be, you know, quite a, I don't know, kind of, you know, you feel the fear, the horror, you know, what it was like to all, you know, spending night after night under aerial bombardment. But my grandma was in a communal air raid shelter in Firvale on Collingsby Road. And all she wrote about was the petty squabbles that used to kick off night after night of this communal air raid shelter, fighting with so-and-so, why, da-da-da, and it used to go on. And it just kind of got me thinking. I thought, you know, depending what age you were, because, you know, my grandma was still quite young then, you know, you had a different perspective on the war. And I kind of asked around, and nobody seemed to be writing anything to mark the 70th anniversary. And I thought, right, I'd really like to tackle this subject, but I need to obviously do it, give it the reverence that it needs. I just read everything I could find. And the one thing that always stuck out to me was that so many people pointed to the reason the Germans bombed Sheffield was to wipe out the armaments factories of the East End. And I could never work out, if they wanted to bomb the armaments factories, why on earth are they, you know, kind of, there was hardly a suburb of the city that wasn't hit, right out, you know, in this area, Dore, Totley, all these areas miles away from the East End were hit. And I could never understand, you know, what, you know, if their targeting was so bad, or, you know, even, you know, when they did hit the East End, they didn't hit it that hard. None of the factories were wiped out for any length of time. So that always kind of stuck with me. And I think just doing a lot of kind of journalism stuff in the, you know, in the past, you're always looking for a really good, unique angle. And I was lucky enough that I came across, it was actually the local studies library said, have you ever seen these German bombing maps we hold? I thought, what? And they actually held this kind of stack of actual German bombing maps of Sheffield, and it actually maps out where they wanted to target. And all the armaments factories were down as targets, but they were all down as secondary targets. And primary targets were all kind of schools and hospitals. And I think nearly a third of the schools of the Sheffield were hit. You know, amazing amount of, you know, schools were hit. So I thought, right, if you know, if this was case, it was probably, you know, it seemed, you know, my conclusion was that it was more of a terror raid that to kind of terrorise the city's population. And I think, it was using that that really kind of, you know, helped, you know, gain interest in kind of my book and open up this whole world for me, you know, that I knew very little about 10 years ago. And I've amassed a load of knowledge that we've ended up doing, you know, that there was very little to mark, you know, the Blitz, the sacrifices were made. We were lucky enough to land a chunk of money from the Heritage Lottery, that we've ended up opening a museum, launched more books, we've got an app, you name it. So, you know, we've done so much. And now we're counting down to the 80th anniversary. So I decided to do a totally updated new version of the book that all started, which is Sheffield's Day with Hitler, which I'm working on at the moment. Yeah, the Sheffield Blitz took place over two nights, the 12th and the 15th, 1940 December. And I think the London Blitz started, I think it was September 1940. So we'd had what they call the Battle of Britain, where the Germans had tried to get dominance of the air. They kind of failed, so they changed their tactics. So they're going to start actually bombing the cities of the country. So they started in London in September 1940, and say Sheffield was never really under any illusion that it was going to be high up on Hitler's hit list, just because of the amount of armaments, you know, we made. And it was no secret that, you know, we were a big part of arming the British Army and what have you. So went through those weeks. I think before Sheffield, I think Liverpool was bombed, Coventry was bombed. But anyway, it got into December, got into early December, and from interviewing people, there seemed to be starting to be a sea change. I thought, right, people decide, right, to hell with Hitler, we're going to actually try and enjoy Christmas. We're going to try and put the thoughts of the war behind us. Now, Thursday night in Sheffield, in that period, was a big going out night. It was a big, big night. And that night, December the 12th, 1940, by 6, 7 o'clock, thousands of people pouring into Sheffield on the kind of trams walking in. The theatres were busy, the bars were busy, the hotels were busy, the cinemas were busy, you know, it was really kind of, really happening. And because by that time there had been so many false alarms, when a siren went, nobody batted an eyelid, because it happened so many times. Talking to my grandma, she was sick of going to the cinema, paying her money, sitting down half an hour, air raid goes, have to finish, lose her money, doesn't see the film. And everybody said, right, I might be that, just sat here. And that's what kind of happened. And when the sirens went off, it was just 7 o'clock on that night, the 12th, Thursday the 12th, of December 1940, nobody really batted an eyelid, because it happened so many times, so many false alarms. And it was only a few minutes later, they could hear the sound of what they call the AK-AK guns, which was the British kind of anti-aircraft fire, which had not been heard, or very few times. They realised, you know, this might be something different. And by kind of 7:30, there was places like Netherhead, Woodseats, all that side of town was already getting hit. And what they were dropping incendiaries. Incendiaries were all about, the first wave of bombers dropped what they called incendiary bombs, which was all about starting fires on the kind of roofs, dropping, you know, starting to kind of set fire to buildings, and then the bigger, heavier bombers would actually have a target. They'd see what was on fire, and then they could drop their real bigger bombs. So by kind of 7:30, you know, they knew it was something kind of serious. And by 8 o'clock, they were starting to clear people out of all these big entertainment centres into the public area shelters. And I think there was, you know, about 9 hours of solid bombing, absolute devastation. You know, people couldn't get out of the city centre. It was absolutely impossible because it was just so intense. I interviewed one chap called Morrison. He remembers actually trying to drive. He'd gone for a drink in the city centre, and he remembers trying to drive back on Abbeydale Road, and he just says, you know, he saw these incandescent lights as incendiaries were coming down, tram lines were coming down. He said it was the scariest time of his entire life. And he says he remembers just getting back to Nether Edge and his parents waiting for him on the doorstep of the house, you know, absolute miracle, you know, that he got back. And he remembers that they sheltered in their cellar, and there was just three of them and their cat. And he said, you know, the one, you know, that they were under no illusions. So we, you know, we've got no doubt they were going to die, no doubt. Said the only saving grace was that they were going to die together. He said it was just so intense what was going off. And actually, the thing that saved them was that they'd actually had the foresight to run the bath of water, and an incendiary bomb came through the top of the house. They were actually managed to run up into the eaves and actually put the fire out, and you know, the thankfully their house wasn't flattened. They survived, but so many people didn't. Let's say an area like Devonshire Green, which is, you know, a lovely green space, before 1940 that was just a thriving community of back-to-back housing. The massive loss of life, that area, you know, so totally flat. And so that bombing went on for 9 solid hours, wave after wave of bombing, right, you know. And there was hardly a suburb of Sheffield that wasn't hit, you know. Nearly a tenth, nearly 50,000 people were made homeless. You know, it was that the bombing was that widespread right across the city. The biggest single loss of life was the Marples Hotel in Fitzalan Square. That was a 7-story building that was hit, like it just collapsed like a pack of cards. And the majority of the people from the Marples were actually all sheltering in the cellars. They got these big cellars that were seen to be, you know, incredibly robust. But the sheer weight of the volume of the rubble from the building collapsed the cellars. And there were, I think, 7 people, I think, rescued from the Marples Hotel. And it's the fact that, say, it was a very, very popular venue at that time. Very, very popular. You know, it was the place to be. And I'm amazed the amount of people that told me that they were actually on their way to Marples, and the different reasons they didn't go there. You know, they didn't, I don't know, they'd been warned, or the sirens went just before they were going to go in. So the amount of people that, you know, that told me they were just so, you know, a twist of fate that they didn't go in. But Doug, the firefighter that I was lucky enough to got to know, he swears that nobody survived. He swears that nobody came out of the Marples. He says they all actually came out of a public air raid shelter next door. That's where they were rescued. So maybe that's something that will never be correct. Again, they say there's so many maybe kind of mysteries that maybe we'll never know the answer. I know one amazing thing happened to me. One piece of good news that came out was actually a baby was born under a hospital bed at Nether Edge Hospital. Nether Edge was bombed, but on the night of the Blitz, this baby was actually born, and it was a massive story. And I was doing a talk about the Blitz a year ago, and I was talking about this, and this chap put his hand up. I was that baby. Wow, what is the chance of that? And it was a massive story. The amount of people I've met, it's a real privilege to, you know, suddenly become a source of knowledge for this, well, very dark period, but you know, it's a fascinating period, you know. And I say the example of a human spirit and how people, you know, managed to carry on under that. You know, there was over 2,000 killed and wounded, nearly a tenth of the city's population made homeless, which is an absolute, man, you know, say out of a population of 500,000, it's absolutely incredible. But it actually ended up getting Sheffield far more behind the war effort, you know, far more stoical, far more, you know, determined to beat Hitler. And I know Winston Churchill held Sheffield up as an example to the whole country, you know, as a way a city, you know, should, you know, act and be resilient in the face of such incredible terror. So yeah, no, it was a real eye opener for me about, you know, kind of how, what happened, you know, how Sheffield rebuilt itself, and you know, you can't imagine what it must have been to live through that period, you know. And obviously, you know, we're going through, you know, quite a traumatic period here in the UK at the moment with kind of COVID. But you know, absolute, you know, just so much kind of changed about life, and there was so many air raids, you know, right through the war. It wasn't, you know, just the two nights of the Sheffield Blitz in 1940. I think the sirens went off within 48 hours of war being declared in September 1939. There were other raids, you know, smaller ones, but the two, what they call them, Sheffield Blitz of December the 12th and 15th of 1940 were the big one. You know, they absolutely changed the face of Sheffield, say the city centre. There is, so you know, there's not as many now because a lot have been replaced, but there, you know, so much of the city centre was, you know just totally flattened, you know, the whole of the moor. So, you know, there's so much of the city centre which is you know, was rebuilt in the 60s. People have often complained about why the city centre, you know, has not got many, you know, nice buildings. It was all faceless 60s concrete. It's because of the Blitz. So much of it was flattened. And you drive around places like, say, Nether Edge. You've got these amazing, resplendent Victorian houses. And then every kind of few houses, suddenly you've got a 50 or 60 semi stuck in the middle of them. And then, you know, now I can actually see. I thought, all right, Blitz. You start to see the signs. So it's... And there is just so, you know, there's so many stories. You know, I've been, you know, humbled by the amount of people that have opened up and, you know, told me terrible, you know, tragic stories, stories of amazing heroism, you kind of name it. But, you know, it was, you know, a moment that changed everything. You know, even my dad, he was 4 years old, three, 4 years old when the Blitz happened. He remembers it vividly. You know, it was such a shocking thing, you know, that changed everything. And you know, it's just a moment that's just kind of, you know, that affected everybody's remembered, and you know, people want to kind of share those memories. For me, I knew at that point, I knew very little about the subject, so I actually wanted to learn about how it happened. I wanted to learn how it linked with the First World War. I wanted to actually do it from a Sheffield perspective, but I also wanted to kind of talk about what was happening nationally in the war effort and internationally. So I actually started with Sheffield's first ever air raid, which was actually a Zeppelin raid in Sheffield in the First World War, which I think sidled over the city in 1916. And obviously at that point, all we were used to was the battle lines were in France and Belgium. And suddenly everything changed because this Zeppelin bombed the Burngreave and Pitsmoor area. So that's where my story starts. And then it goes into the fact that that Hitler was in the First World War, fighting on the side of the Germans. Him, like the rest of Germany, was absolutely devastated when they lost. And that kind of thing never kind of left them, that there was hyperinflation, the whole economy, you know, everything went in Germany. And that kind of thing gave rise to... kind of, or certainly kind of provided the environment that that helped something like the quite extreme Nazi party, you know, start to grow in prominence, come to power. That the Nazis came to power in 1933, which, you know, that, so Germany started to rearm, which persuaded Britain to rearm, because we were rearming. A lot of that fell to Sheffield, so suddenly we were in full employment in Sheffield as all the armaments factories, you know, really kind of kicked into life. So I try to put it into kind of context about how they kind of the war kind of started. And I did quite a bit on Sheffield City Hall, because I was quite interested on Sheffield City Hall, about how that idea for that hall was first conceived in the First World War. And it was all about creating probably a monument to commemorate all the men of Sheffield that died in the First World War. But after the war, The city ran out of money. You know, after the war, the whole country employment started rising, and the whole idea for the city hall was mothballed. And it wasn't until the late 20s that the idea was actually came out. You know, they actually ended up building the hall. It didn't open until 1932, just before the Nazis came to power. And I was really interested by the City Hall story, because one week they'd got concerts arguing for peace around the world, the next week they'd got 15,000 people outside protesting that they'd allowed Britain's answer to Hitler, Oswald Mosley, and his British Union of Fascists actually have, he was a big Nazi sympathiser, they were allowing them to actually hold their meetings in the City Hall. And then also the City Hall only just survived the Second World War, that a massive landmine landed in Barker's Pool, and the City Hall is actually one of the few places you can actually see actual bomb damage. You can actually see shrapnel marks across the pillars. And then I actually went into the rebuild, how long it took Sheffield to rebuild itself. Places like, say, Atkinson's department store totally flattened in 1940. It wasn't until 20 years on, 1960, that it got to actually reopen with the new store. So it took the city many, many years to actually rebuild, get back on its feet. So, you know, I tried to kind of provide something. If you've got no knowledge, you know, you've got a good knowledge of how it happened, you get to see the national picture, the international picture. And it gave me, you know, it actually gave me that knowledge, because, say, I thought I was kind of learning as you went along. I was down in kind of, you know, I was down at the War Museum in London. I was going to all their, you know, they gave me access to their archives. It was a real massive journey of discovery. I read everything I could find about the Blitz, so much, you know, and I could see why now there is such an interest in that period. I'm fascinated by all sorts of periods, but, you know, there is a big fascination for that whole period, and I can see why now. You just never seem to run out, and it's, you know, once you start getting that knowledge, you know, you kind of start coming up with your own theories about how kind of things happened, and, you know, why things happened in certain ways. I learned so much about, you know, kind of Sheffield and the Sheffield people, and why it's the way it is, and what we went through. But I spent days and days interviewing people. I could still be doing it now, and that would just be from the first book. You know, I think anybody, you know, could say there's such vivid memories that, you know, that's just stuck with you for your whole life. You know, they were just so shocking, you know, that what actually happened. It's amazing, you know, people, you know, managed to kind of recover and, you know, kind of get on with it, because, you know, say, they were just so shocking. And I think it's actually, for many people, it was only in later life. I think a lot of people had actually managed to bury a lot of the memories, more of the horrific ones, and some of the and actually, say, I've ended up doing another two, three books, and I'm obviously working on another one at the moment. And I think it's only when people, obviously now, most people who went through the Blitz are in their mid to late 80s, 90s now, and I think it's because a lot of people getting towards the end of their life, I think they're wanting to maybe unburden some of the more kind of shocking, and they are actually talking about, you know, I was amazed, I live in Millhouses, and a lady was talking to me about, you know, dead mob bodies in Millhouses Park. Absolutely, you know, you just can't imagine, you know, these things happen, but, you know, they did happen. And you know, I've got the privilege of, you know, actually trying to, you know, record it so people will learn from it, and hopefully, you know, that, you know, we're never going to have to go through anything similar again. I think you realise now it is a kind of natural reaction. It is a kind of human instinct to kind of pull together and also to adapt. It's amazing. I know how I've adapted, you know, my own work. You know, the things that, you know, the amount of people I know with businesses that have just totally rewritten their business model in the last 3 months, and you couldn't imagine it happening in any other time. So it is, you know, we are obviously a very resilient breed, you know. We do. For me, it's been, you know, it's been a real kind of lesson in, you know, you do, you know, I talk about, you know, how different people were in 1940, but I thought, actually, no, you're not. Actually, you can adapt. You know, suddenly, if you're thrust into that position, you know, you do what you can to adapt and to survive. And, you know, we talk about the you know, the loss of community, and it doesn't actually, you know, if the situation is right, you know, it can turn around in a blink of an eye. So, you know, it has been a real eye opener. The kind of town hall organised all the help for people that had lost loved ones, that had lost houses, that had lost power, you name it. Everybody, they put all the their kind of services or representatives inside the central library on Surrey Street. And on the morning of the 13th, there was hundreds, thousands of people amassed down there, you know, to try and get help. And everybody said how amazingly calm everybody was. Incredibly calm, where, you know, the city was in ruins. They'd lost loved ones, they'd lost homes. And say it was, they said it was amazing. There was just an incredible air of calm around. You say you still can't, you know, imagine how, you know, people did it, people went through it, but they did. And by the spring, obviously, getting into 1941, the Germans' tactics changed. They invaded Russia, and so they kind of took, you know, the emphasis came away from Britain. There were still the air raids, there were still other attacks, but nothing that, you know, that would ever compare to those two nights. And say the bombers returned on the 15th, and their bombing was more concentrated on the East End, on the armaments factories, but nothing, you know, they didn't cause any major damage. They didn't put any factories out of production for any length of time. And I was always amazed. Sheffield had one of the lowest evacuation rates anywhere in the country. They were doing, you know, they were having meetings, call outs through the press, you know, you need to evacuate your kids. Sheffield's high on the hit list, and the amount of people that sent their kids away was just so low. And it really brought it home. My dad, who lived on Bodmin Street with his family in Attercliffe. They got the massive brown Bayliss steelworks at the bottom of their road. They were absolutely in the midst. They've got armaments factories all around them. And he remembers, you know, even at 2 years old, pleading with his parents not to be sent away. He didn't get sent away. None of his friends got sent away. Joe Ashton, the MP, he lived down there. And it was amazing. I thought, wow, if you lived absolutely in the eye of the storm with your kids, then you still didn't send them away. It really kind of brought it home. And I know all the windows went out of their house on the night of the Blitz. But the saving grace of the goldfish survived. We have a dedicated Sheffield Blitz section now, which is in the National Emergency Services Museum, which is on Shales Moor. Fascinating. Friend Doug, so sadly passed away, the firefighter, he kind of does the voiceover for some of the stuff. We've got an original fire engine, I think the last surviving one that actually fought the fires. We've got some amazing stuff in there, so go and visit that. If you want to, we've got the app, the Sheffield Blitz app, which you can download for free. That will take you right around to kind of landmarks around the city centre. It's got the stories on there. It's got amazing photos. It's absolutely, you know, there's so much knowledge on that app. It's absolutely fantastic. And then we've had a book out. We've got a website. You know, we've got so much to go at. And then in a couple of months' time, there's going to be the 10th anniversary of Sheffield's date with Hitler. So compared to 10 years ago, there's a sea of information out there. I think you could write books, you know, until the end of time on it, because there's just so much stuff, and everybody has their own story of those two nights that, you know, that's been ingrained for a lifetime.